If you are someone who has ever had pets and ever had to deal with the grief of losing a pet or mourning a pet while they're still alive, you're gonna love my next guest. Jen Robertson is a 3-5 emotional projector. She's a veterinarian and she runs an online business that helps pet parents prepare for the loss of their pet. She supports them through the euthanasia process if that's part of what they're doing, and has developed an entire online business to support you in this. Jen is another example of one of my Design to Profit members who is building her business her way. In this episode, we talk about her upcoming podcast and how she's recording that with her undefined throat in her human design. We talk about her big offer that she's working on now and her low ticket offer. And I know that you're going to get some juice from this. If you are a projector in human design, if you love a projector in human design, you're definitely going to want to tune into this episode because Jen really gets into her lived experience as a projector. What does getting invitations feel like? How do you know when it's the wrong invitation? What does recognition feel like? How do you recognize yourself? All of the things. She's also an entrepreneur who has tried to merge two businesses and then ended up giving one up. So we cover a lot of ground in this episode. It's a bit longer than my usual episodes, but it's well worth it for you. So welcome, Jen. Thank you for being here on Unjaded today.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky. I'm excited to be here and talk about human design and business.
Yes, for sure. So let's start with your business. What is your business at this moment?
So my business at this moment is called Sage Paws, and I'm a veterinarian, and I help pet parents with senior pets prepare for end of life and support them through anticipatory pet loss grief.
Mm. And how did you land in that field?
Oh man, how much time do we have?
As much as we need.
As much as we need. So I've known I wanted to be a veterinarian ever since I was 8 years old. I don't remember a single defining moment, but I just knew that's what I wanted to do. And I can also remember a memory of my grandma telling her that I wanted to be a zookeeper. I wanted to be one of the trainers at SeaWorld. I think I was like 4 years old and we went and I pointed at them. I was like, I want to do that. And my grandma in grandma fashion was like, no, you need to be a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or something like that. And I was like, well, okay, I guess I'll be a doctor of animals. So I decided to pursue veterinary medicine. It took me 2 tries to get in. I wasn't sure I was going to apply a second time. Wasn't sure I was going to go when I got accepted. But ultimately, after talking to some family members, one of my uncles was like, the time's going to pass anyway. So would you like to call yourself a doctor at the end of 4 years or no? And I was like, okay, that's a fair point. And then my mom was like, try it for a year. That way, you know, if you like it, but if you don't, then, you know, you've tried it. You've experimented with it, bringing in my line 3 with my human design. She's like, and you'll be in a little bit of debt, but then you'll at least know. Because it was really hard for me to think about moving all the way across the country for vet school, leaving everything that I knew behind, and it was going to be really, really expensive. So it was like weighing all of those things, but ultimately decided to go. And I never really felt drawn to a specialty or that I was going to do an internship like my classmates did. There were so many that were like, I'm going to go into emergency medicine. I'm going to specialize in cardiology. I'm going to do an internship. And I just never felt that passion, that desire, that drive until there was a vet business management association symposium that we had. And the keynote speaker was a veterinarian who started a company doing in-home end-of-life care, euthanasia. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that I heard about hospice and palliative care for pets. And listening to her talk, I felt something in my soul. Like, I think I would be really good at helping people through that process. And it was like that first time where I finally felt like I had found a path that I wanted to pursue as a veterinarian. And it stuck with me throughout vet school. As I approached graduation, I was toying with the idea, you know, do I go to general practice, get my feet wet, get some experience, or do I just start out going into end-of-life care? And I ultimately decided to go pursue end-of-life care. pursue general practice. Just, I wanted to get a medical knowledge foundation, just get some experience before diving into it. But the desire to go down that path has always stuck with me. And I remember getting a message from another veterinarian who had been doing that for a company here locally where I live. And she said, "Hey, I'm planning on moving. They might be looking for someone to replace me. Would you be interested in setting up an interview?" And I was like, "Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do it. This is exciting." And I had a couple interviews. I was really like very, very interested, but wasn't 100% on it. And then I had a euthanasia appointment at the general practice I was working at. And they had specifically requested me for this appointment. I looked at the chart. I'd never seen this pet before, but they had been seen at one of the sister clinics that I worked for. And they'd been seen by another doctor, Jen. Mm-hmm. And I went to the front desk and I was like, "Hey, do you mind reaching out to this owner just to make sure that they know which Dr. Jen they're getting?" Because to me, I'm like, nothing would be worse than walking in that room for that appointment and I am not who they expected they were mm-hmm. getting. And so they called the owner and they were like, "Yes, that's the Dr. Jen that we want." And I was like, "Okay, perfect." And I remember walking into that room and it was a older mom with her older son and their adorable 18-year-old Westie. Mm. And before I could even like start talking and going through my usual spiel, the woman, she said, "We knew that you had to be the one to do this appointment because we saw your picture on the website and you had such compassion in your eyes and we knew that you had to be the person." And I get like choked up and like chills as I am remembering this. And this was over 10 years ago. And I hear that. And then the son is like, "You got to be the strong one for us." And I'm just like, "My God, how am I supposed to be the strong one after that?" But found the courage to go on. And I went through my spiel and the appointment just went so beautifully as it could go. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking out of the room and checking my email. And that's the day that I got the offer for the mm-hmm. job to do the in-home end of life care. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay, universe."
Yeah,
I hear you.
Yeah.
And then I went to, there's a hospice and palliative care conference. It was shortly after that. And I went to that and I remember the like opening session and hearing them talk about the work that they were doing. And I cried because I finally felt like I had found my people, my niche. Mm-hmm. Like I just knew that this was the area of veterinary medicine I wanted to dedicate my life to. And I did in-home end-of-life care for about 2 years and unfortunately burnt out due to the schedule. Mm-hmm. It was one of the hardest decisions for me to walk away from that job because I absolutely loved the work. I loved the work so much. I loved getting to meet families and just the honor and the privilege to be invited into that. I call it a sacred space because it's a very vulnerable space. There's a lot of emotion. It is a tremendous honor and privilege to have someone call you and say, "Hey, can you help us during this time as we're saying goodbye to our family member?" And it was so hard to walk away from, but the schedule was not sustainable. And this was before I was even married, before I had kids, but I could already see like this was not gonna work out long term. And so I left that job and went to a nonprofit and it was a much better schedule. It was Monday through Friday. There were no weekends. I was done by like 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm like, this is a unicorn job in vet med because this just does not happen, especially not no weekend work. And I think I knew long before I finally admitted to myself that it was not a good fit for me. It was work I was not passionate about. It was a very toxic work environment. And then the pandemic happened and we closed for 6 weeks. And during those 6 weeks, I did a lot of soul searching. I did a lot of walks with my husband at our local park. And we were just talking about, you know, like, I just wanted to do work that I was passionate about again, but I wasn't 100% on going back to doing in-home end of life care. And I'm like, if I'm going to start that, I want to be very, very like 100% on that. And I just wasn't there. And during that time, I got a journal and I started like brain dumping all the things I was passionate about. And I wanted to go back to the end of life care. And then I found life coaching. And I had another moment where I was like, this is something I feel like I'd be really good at. How can I combine life coaching and my passion for end of life care and create a business where I can be in control of my schedule. I don't have to have a manager or a boss. I don't have to ask for time off. Like, I don't have to ask for permission for anything. And how can I create this business where I can work from anywhere? And that's how Sage Paws came to be. How I blended my passion for the end of life care and the life coaching. And through the 4 years, 5 years in this business, it has kind of evolved. I started out doing anticipatory grief, but also post-loss support. And over the last couple of years, I have really kind of like honed in on the anticipatory grief, the preparing, doing this work ahead of time. And don't really do as much of the post-loss anymore, because I am so passionate about the preparation. Yeah. And I feel like that is where my wheelhouse and my genius, my zone of genius is in the helping them prepare. Because I felt like when I was doing the in-home end of life care, like it was very focused on the pet. It was very medical, which it should be. And we did focus on the owner a little bit, the emotional support, but I just imagined myself leaving their house and the floodgates opening with questions, with concerns, with all these fears and nowhere for it to go. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to be able to give clients that space where they could unpack all of that stuff, a space for them to just get all of that out of their heads. So they're not just sitting there and spiraling and just, they don't have that peace of mind. And yeah, that was another reason why I ended up starting Sage Paws, was to give those families that place to go.
So I hear so much of your human design in this. I'm just going to bring it around to human design for a minute. I hear the projector getting the invitations over and over and over again. I hear how you can emotionally hold people because you are so emotionally defined. So in my experience of human design with clients, with family, with whatever, say you were someone with an undefined emotional system instead of your very well-defined emotional system, you may be very well amplifying those emotions of that family. But instead, because you have all of that definition, you're so able to hold the emotion with the family. And I think that's a big piece of what they saw in your eyes, that first family. And also your dormant gate 27 in your sacral is that mama bear energy that just holds. However, because it's dormant, you probably tire of that from time to time. And then I hear your third line bumping your way through the whole, like, it's so beautiful that your family knew that you needed to do that, even though they probably didn't know that you needed to do that, that they were just okay with that. It is such a beautiful use of that third line. So yeah, just, I've got goosebumps on my arm. So what brought you specifically to the online space? You were doing a lot of in-home work. Just in a few sentences, like, how did you decide, okay, there's something I can actually do online here? Was that the 2020 shit show? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. The 2020 okay. Shit show.
Yeah.
I would say that was definitely it, where it was like, you know, we were all at home and we were shut down, and I knew I eventually wanted a family and wanted, like I said, that flexibility and that freedom to work from anywhere. And that's mm-hmm. where I was like, how can I create this virtual practice to help more families? Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to just be local. I've had a couple international clients, and that has been really, really cool. Yeah. So that was a big push for virtual.
Yeah. I love the questions you ask yourself. How can I do this? Because so many people, we know that the quality of our questions determines the quality of our lives. And so many times, I mean, I'm super guilty of this, asking a question that keeps me stuck instead of asking a question like, how can I, because your subconscious wants to answer it, needs to answer it when you put that out there. Now, how old are your children?
My oldest is going to be 5 in September, and then my youngest will be 2.5 next month.
So you're a young mom. You're in the online space building this business. You started building it knowing you wanted to have a family. And then fast forward, you have your children and you start a second business. No judgment in this next statement, as a projector. Now, we know that you're a motorized projector. So oftentimes, and just for our listeners, what that means is that Jen has motors defined in her design. A projector will never have the sacral defined, but she has all three other motors defined, which means you would not run into Jen and think, you know, she's not someone who presents as always tired. She's not someone who can't push through and do the thing. She's got a lot of energy on board. And I hate the way that we say this in human design space, but for a projector, I hate that. But definitely more energy than someone with, you know, a couple of centers defined, because you have all of this motorized energy. So get to the point, Vicky. You start a second business, mm-hmm. empowered mother, helping mm-hmm. young moms, because that's the experience you're in. And your third line, mm-hmm. and your third line is, you know, bumping around with motherhood and doing all the things. And then your fifth line is like, okay, I've got practical solutions. I can be a visionary leader for these moms. How long does that go on with two businesses?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I remember I call these pivotal moments. So like the pandemic was a pivotal mm-hmm. moment for me of like, I'm done with this shit, like something like there's more to life than this. Mm. Like the pandemic put that into perspective of like, there is more to life than this. And I don't want to sleepwalk through life and do this work that I'm not passionate about doing. Like, we just never know how long mm-hmm. we have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is like the foundation of both of these businesses. So it was like that one helped me build Sage Paws, and then becoming a mom. I remember hitting rock bottom week 3 postpartum with my oldest. It was the lowest I had ever felt mentally, physically, emotionally. I had this feeling that I wanted to do things differently. I was drawn to doing things differently, questioning the mainstream advice that was out there. It just was like so much noise and just this contradiction of do this, don't do that. And then it'd be the opposite of like, no, don't do that. Do this instead. And I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to, what am I supposed to listen to? Like, this is all so conflicting. And I just remember that week, very vividly, we had gone to a garden store. I was having some like pain unrelated to labor and was just in so much pain. And my husband's talking about getting landscaping. My disability check hadn't come in. I'm like, do we really need to be spending all this money that we might not have? Like all this stuff. And I remember like fighting back tears because I was just so overwhelmed, so newly postpartum. And we got home. I remember taking Everett upstairs. I found a comfortable spot to sit in our bed, and he nursed himself to sleep for a contact nap. And I just started scrolling Instagram, and I found this doula's page. And I remember reading her posts, and I was like, that sounds like me. Oh my God. Like, I'm not crazy for wanting to do things different. Like, I'm not, this is not just me who wants to do things this way. And it was the validation that I so needed. And just, I felt so seen through her posts. And it was from that moment where I was decided that enough was enough. I was done listening to all this outside noise. I had a lot of stuff around like feeding with like breastfeeding. I remember the lactation consultant coming in 48 hours after Everett was born and being like, you got to wake him up. He's got to be awake to get a full feed, like strip him down, tickle his feet, basically do anything to keep him awake. Instead of asking me, how do your breasts feel after he's done nursing, even if he's asleep? Because they were empty and that milk had to go somewhere, and it sure as shit was not going back into my body. Mm-hmm. So clearly he was getting a feeding even though he was asleep. And it just felt so natural to let him do that. And that was, I think, the first moment where I started to question stuff. And then it was like baby sleep was another one of these eat, sleep, play, wake windows, like follow this, follow that, put him down drowsy, but awake. And I never could get it right. Mm. And I felt like a complete failure. I felt
Can
like
I just stop
failure.
You for a second?
Yes.
Sorry. We will come back to that. But I just want to bring listeners up to speed for a second. So again, we have this third line journey through early motherhood, this third line questioning, bumping around, trying it this way, trying it that way, feeling like a failure. You know, third lines have my heart and soul for this failure, the shame piece that third lines have. And I think it's been my experience shows me with my third lines that it's been so ingrained in you for your entire lives to feel shame around this failing and mistakes, very much in air quotes for those listening. And it shows up over and over and over again. And we are going to talk about this, but I also want to bring listeners up to speed on one more beautiful thing that you said. You may not even realize that you said. So when Jen said, I put this baby, you know, I nursed this baby to sleep, and then I scrolled Instagram and I found this account and I started reading and I thought, this is me, this is me, this is me, this is me. That's what we need to be doing in our content. It's called self-identifying content. If you never hear anything else from this podcast, please hear that you want to be pulling your people in by letting them know that they are seen, by sharing those symptoms that they are experiencing. This Instagram person was probably, and we can absolutely name this doula if you know who she is. But she was speaking to the symptoms that you were having. She was speaking to actually your lived experience that made you feel, oh my God, I'm not alone, which is so important. And then you went on through Empowered Mother. I know you do it in Sage Pause as well, but you went on through Empowered Mother to do that for your people who were following you. Mm-hmm. So you took that failure and you turned it, or that, not failure, that internalized feeling of failure, and you turned it, yes, into not only mothering your own children, but empowering other moms to not feel like, yes, they were crazy, yes, inept, mm-hmm, inadequate, all of the things. Yes. Yes. And it's an online, yeah, business.
Yes, it's another online business.
And it's now on pause.
And it is now on pause.
Because?
It is now on pause because I went through a business course, and I made the decision. I just wasn't feeling the energy for it. Mm-hmm. I would go to create content and nothing was coming. It just felt like it fell flat. And I just felt like I lost my meth race. Oh my gosh, my cat is crazy. I just felt like I had lost what I wanted to talk about. It just did not feel easy. And I felt like I was just like pushing up, mm-hmm, a hill. Mm-hmm. And I made the decision to kind of put it on the back burner for now and fully focus my energy on building Sage Pause, because I was feeling on fire for that business. I felt so much energy for that business when it came to creating offers, when it came to messaging, and just really wanted to just focus on that. And there was shame around, mm, setting down Empowered as a Mother, because it's like, well, I worked with a branding specialist strategist and built a website. And it was like shortly after all of that where I was just like, I just don't know that I'm feeling this as a business. I mean, it may continue as more of a empowerment page, or it might not. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I did feel like I was pushing through energy that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do feel like I have so much energy, even as a projector, I would question like, am I really a projector? I feel like, mm-hmm, I'm a manifesting generator, like wanting to do all these things, being multi-passionate. Like, I just don't feel tired. Like, mm-hmm, they say projectors, yeah, I would feel tired.
Until.
Until. Yeah.
But I
and
would
it
love
wasn't
to just
necessarily feel like, I didn't necessarily feel like tired, but it was just like, I just felt like I was forcing it. I could just, yeah, like, I just felt like in my body, like,
yeah,
for those who can't see, I'm like pushing my hands forward. It just felt like I was pushing up, yeah, against a wall.
And I would love to normalize that for the entrepreneurs listening, because how many times, I mean, that's, they say business is third line, you're third line, but I mean, we all have to third line it through our businesses. And I think every single one of us has had at least one experience where we have spent a shit ton of money and a shit ton of time on building something that we get to the end of and we go, eh. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, and I know you and I are both emotionally defined. So we, mm-hmm, have that within us as well, where we got to get in the experience. We got to feel, yes, our way through it the entire time. And sometimes, yes, it's going to cost money, and it's going to cost time, and it's going to cost emotional energy. And at the end of the day, how can we let it be okay? Because so much of the bro space feels like that time is wasted. But for us, we're third lining it. And also emotionally, we're feeling our way through it. It really is where the juice is for life, is in those experiences, mm-hmm, even if we have to drop them.
Yeah. Yeah.
How hard was, yeah, it for you to make that decision to drop it?
It was definitely challenging. There was guilt and shame,
yeah,
that came up with, yep, that feeling like a failure. I'm, yep, like, my whole design, here it comes.
Yeah.
And I remember talking with my husband about it, and I learned through you that I'm a verbal processor. And I think I've always on some level known that. Mm-hmm. But it was so helpful just to like talk this out. And I mean, he supports me in everything. Like, I'm very lucky in that regard. And I remember, like, after talking to him, that helped alleviate some of the guilt and the shame. But I know that was just something else that I had to process through. But I like what you said about being the emotional authority and having to feel our way through it, like actually go and do the thing and feel, not just sitting there thinking about it and like feeling the emotions as you're thinking about it. And I'd never heard that before you described it that way. And I was like, yeah, that's so right. Like, I can't always just make a decision just by thinking and feeling. Like, I have to actually get in there and try it out for myself and see, like, yep, this is good. No, it's not. But then I learn these lessons and get this wisdom along the way that I can now apply to my other business. Or I'm sure if I continued with both, I'd be like, okay, we're going to pivot from here and go this way. But
And you may pick it up again, like you said, who knows what the future holds. But there was a time where, and I want to talk about this because it's, I think, very relevant for our listeners, because I feel like every entrepreneur has been here too. There was a time where you were trying to combine the two and you were like almost breaking your brain thinking, how can I make these two fit together in the right way? The right way, in air quotes. Yeah.
Yes.
Can you say something about
that? Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I can feel that frustration coming back in my body, like, of just wanting it to work so bad, trying to find, like, I wanted to create like one website. I was fine with having two different Instagrams. I wanted to create one website just to like hold everything in one place versus having two separate ones. And I would just frustrate myself so much trying to find this through line. Like, how am I going to make this work? And I would like be like, oh, this is how I could. But then I'd be like, it just doesn't feel like how I want to approach the motherhood side of things. So, yeah, that was definitely the bane of my existence, I think, is an exact quote from me from one of our calls, where I was just like, this is the bane of my existence. I feel like I'm banging my head up against the wall. And it was just so, so frustrating, but it's been so freeing to just let that go and not try to overthink with my open ajna, not try to overthink. So, yeah.
And what's next for Sage Paws?
I am currently working on a low ticket offer, a quality of life assessment toolkit that is in the works. And then I am also working on a longer coaching container for clients, more on the preparing for the loss with, it's like a combination of the practical and the emotional support. So taking a deeper dive into, because right now I just offer one-to-one sessions, they're 90 minutes, and I have different topics that I like to cover, but also meeting the client where they are. But with this longer container, I want it to be more of like a pathway with a little bit more of a framework of, these are the most important things to think about as you're preparing. And I would love to start working with pet parents once they're pet enters the senior stage, almost like what we would do for ourselves, is creating this end of life plan, this advanced directive, a will, an estate plan. So similar for pets of, you know, we meet when the it's not chaotic, it's not panic filled, it's, you know, long before you hopefully need this, when you aren't in the deep emotional brain fog that can happen when you start to really feel that anticipatory grief, or if you find yourself in that emergent need to make a decision now situation, like, you start talking about this, and I think it helps to decrease the fear and of the unknown, and you have this plan. So if you do find yourself in that situation, it can help make the decision, making decisions a little bit easier, because you've already talked about it when the stakes were low and you were a little bit more clear and not trying to frantically make these decisions.
And I think we've all been in that situation where we've had to make a decision and where we feel like we're kind of under the gun, for lack of a better expression. So yesterday, I don't know if you know this, but yesterday we have a senior dog. We have two senior dogs, and Berkeley will be 13 on August 13th. And she disappeared from the cottage. She got out of the fence, dropped the gate, and away she went. She went on this big, big ass tour. And she's only done that one other time in her life. And I was at home. My husband was at the cottage. It was 4 hours later before she came back. But I'm thinking, what if she got hurt? What if her foot got in a trap? What if, like, and what is this going to lead to? And we've never talked about this. I've always been the one who is with our dogs at end of life. And I'm like, we haven't even mm-hmm. talked about this. Pete's there. I'm not all of these things where it's like, if we just had sat down with someone like you and just went through everything for these dogs, one of them's in poor health, Berkeley's in great health, but the other one's in poor health. And it's like, these are decisions we're going to have to make. So like you say, like with a human, I mean, we do it for ourselves, mm-hmm. but we don't think of it. Mm-hmm. And a pet loss is such a massive loss. Such a massive loss mm-hmm. in your life. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So back to business here. You're starting with the offer. Where did you learn yes. to start with the offer? We're starting with the offer because that's what we teach in Design to Profit. You may have heard of other places as well.
Yes.
But we start with the offer and then we work backwards, which we've been doing a little bit of with your work because mm-hmm. you're also working on a podcast, which I think is absolutely yes. amazing. So amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So yes. how will you help people through with your podcast?
I think I haven't really like laid it all out, but right. I envision it being just going deeper into the topics that I'm passionate about talking about that I think will really help pet parents during this time and just not feel constrained like I do on Instagram, where mm-hmm. it's like you've got 0.256 seconds to catch someone's attention in a sea right. of everyone else trying to do the same. And it's like, I find myself writing really long posts and yeah. it's hard for me to pare it down as you know. So I would really like the podcast to be just that deeper dive into those topics, a place where a senior pet parent can come to and listen to that when it's 2 a.m. and they're spiraling because their dog is having a really rough night, and just give them maybe some tips on how to navigate through this, like, and just the validation and helping them feel seen, coming back to what we were talking mm-hmm. about with my Empowered as a Mother business of like really helping them feel seen and not alone, because pet loss is already a form of what's called disenfranchised grief, where society doesn't mm-hmm. Fully understand it. They don't acknowledge it. They minimize it. They invalidate it. And I feel like anticipatory grief is even more of a subset of that, where people just don't get how pet parents can feel sad before mm-hmm. their pet has gone. They're sad mm-hmm. about this loss that hasn't occurred. So it's like isolating them even more. Mm-hmm. And I've met so many that don't even know that there's a term for what they're feeling, anticipatory grief. They don't even know what it is, but then they hear me describe it and name it. And they're like, oh my God, that's what yeah. I've been experiencing. And it just, I think helps to take your power back when you can name something, when you can put a name to what you're experiencing. It just like, I just feel this like, oh, okay, there is something to call this. And it's not just me, and letting people know, like, you're not crazy for grieving your pet before they're gone. I've been experiencing grief with my cat Reese since she was 6 weeks old, and she just turned 15 in April. So it's like, you're not crazy for yeah. feeling sad about losing them when they're still here. So I feel like that's going to be the deep message of my podcast, is just that validation. And especially as a caregiver, because it can be really intense caregiving yeah. and just giving them that space where it's like, it's okay if you're feeling frustrated and you're tired and you're exhausted and you also like don't want to wish this time away, like all those things, just mm-hmm. giving them that place to go.
Yeah. Validation. I think you've said that a couple times, and it's like so mm-hmm. important for so many people, for all of us. Yeah. On our last, I'm going to just switch gears here a little bit, but kind of same, because I want to talk about your podcast. So on our last Design to Profit call, we kind of accidentally talked about your podcast and started planning out the bones of it. And I love that you brought up anticipatory grief again, because there's something here for our listeners beyond anticipatory grief with pets. Because it's one of the terms that you use in your business that people maybe don't understand, one of your podcast episodes in the very beginning. So what we did in Design to Profit, that call, was we kind of build out the bones or the structure, not formally. You're going to take that away, your emotional authority. You're going to take that away from the call. You're going to process it, do all the things that you do. You're going to systemize it as your projector brain does and bring something beautiful to the world. But we framed out, like, what does the structure have to look like for your podcast? So for our listeners, if you are thinking about a podcast, you really want to frame out those first few episodes that people can binge, that lets them know they're in the right place and that explains things that they may not understand otherwise. Your point of view in life. Jen has a very strong point of view on this anticipatory grief. So when she brings people into that conversation, they can self-identify. They can put their hand up. They can say, my God, I need to follow this show, and binge those first however many episodes you put out. And with your undefined throat, this is something we talk about in all of my stuff, is undefined throat versus defined throat versus motorized throat in a podcast. So how do you plan to do your podcast? Are you going to do a series? Are you going to do just when you have the energy to batch it out, or the stuff coming through to batch it out? What do you plan?
I think I'll probably do a mix of both of those, where it's like, if I'm just really tuning into how I'm feeling, and if it's like, oh, let's do two episodes, like, mm-hmm. okay, let's do it. Or if it's just, you know, doing a series, like I feel like a series would probably be good, where I can, now that we've talked about it, I have an idea of where to start. Cause that's what I was struggling with. I'm like, I have so many things that I want to talk about. Like, where do I hone in? And so going through that on our last call, that was really helpful to at least give me a starting point. Mm-hmm. And then, God, I don't even know how many episodes could come from it, but it's like, I could re-listen to that call and then just kind of be like, okay, this, decide on what I'm going to do. And then write the script for it, or however you do it with podcasting.
However you want to do it.
But I think, probably just trying to feel like, okay, is the energy here for creating this? And it will probably be a series. I would love to do like one podcast a week, but I think for just starting out, just to get a batch of them done, like if I can get five done, mm-hmm. I'll be happy. To just have those five out there and then just work up and find my rhythm. Because I have found that a lot of times on Wednesdays, I don't know what it is about Wednesdays, but I have a lot of creativity and I just feel like things flow through.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Wow.
So that may be,
that's so
that
funny.
May be a day where it's like, okay, let's work on the podcast. But I haven't quite like dove into it, but I think listening to the call we had will give me a good starting point for that.
And it sounds very much like you're trusting your design to carry you through.
I am. And that has been, I mean, learning about human design has been such a game changer for me. And I feel like I came to it personally, then stepped away from it. And then I really wanted to use it in business. I was drawn back to it through the lens of using it in your business. And it's like through that, I feel it ripple into my like everyday life too. So
This is a completely different topic, but you mentioned something about writing long captions for Instagram. And you, I know you laugh, but you're a beautiful long form writer. Like so many times when, so coming through Content by Design, I mean, everybody at the first part is like first module, there's like, you know, I have to cut things down to like a 12th of what they are. And that was definitely a you thing because we try to talk about all the things at once and all of that. But then as you went through, like you just got better and better and better at really honing in and going deep on one thing. And I know now I've got a piece of content in my files I haven't done anything on social media in a month, and that's okay. And I'm looking at it going, gosh, there's not a lot here that I would actually change. Like it's such a beautiful journey that you've been on. And I know you're not faulting yourself, but I certainly wouldn't fault you on long form, on writing long captions, because that can become anything, a blog, an email, a podcast episode. So much better to start with those long, well-written pieces than to have these little tiny things you're trying to make into something, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you helped me see that too, through going through design or CBD, going through CBD of like, starting with long and then like breaking it down into short. And that's where I felt like choosing a long form piece of long form content, podcasting just felt, initially I was so against podcasting because I'm really? Like, oh, I don't know.
How come?
And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do, I think because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I don't know that like, it felt like a lot to do.
Okay.
But the more initially I was going to do a blog, but then the more I sat with it and like, I heard you talking throughout our calls about podcasting. And then I was like, you know what, this might actually be the way to go because I can write the long form script that I'm going to talk about. And then the transcript can be turned into a blog post and then I can turn it into a YouTube. It just felt easier to me to do a podcast than I would get more bang for my buck of like, I'm filming a video, I've got the audio, I've got the transcript, I can then like create all these smaller pieces of content. So that I really thought I was going to do a blog first. And then I was just like, no, I think I want to do a podcast first because I do enjoy being a guest on podcasts. Like I really like it. And I've heard people say on my posts on Instagram that my voice is so soothing. And it's just so gentle. And I just felt like that's what my clients need to hear me. They need to hear my voice. Mm-hmm. They don't just need to read what I have to say. They need to hear how I'm saying it. So that was another like push for doing a podcast over just like just a blog. Not just a blog, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I love how you say like you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck out of it, because that's very true about a podcast and very important for all of us and for being a projector. Like, let's get you some bang for your buck.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, if I'm going to pour energy into doing something, I want it to be like, do this one thing and then it just felt easier that it would ripple out from there. Yeah. And something else that you had that we talked about in CBD was creating content. What was it, by recognition or in response? Oh my God, I'm blanking on your strategy, right?
Oh, yes, creating content
based on your strategy.
Yeah.
And I remember I'm like, because you talk about being a manifesting generator, how you create content in response. I'd never thought of it that way, but I was like, wow, that feels so easy to think about creating content when I feel recognized for things. Mm-hmm. And that has been such a huge piece for me. I'm like, this feels like the equivalent to what you talk about, like creating content in response is for a projector. Yeah. I create content in recognition, like when I recognize myself or when others recognize me for different things.
Can we just unpack that for a minute? Because I love to hear because that's not going to be my experience of life. So I want to hear your lived experience. What does it feel like when you were recognized? And can you give us some examples of how someone else might recognize you or something else they might recognize? And then we'll do how you recognize yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard to describe, but it just feels so good. Like internally, it just feels like, like I just feel like I'm on cloud nine, like just beaming when I get recognized, especially. And I've noticed that with Sage Paws, more than Empowered as a Mother, I felt like I wasn't getting as much recognition. And I know I need to recognize myself first as a projector, but I felt like I wasn't
getting
that in the same way that I do with Sage Paws, because I started to notice like, okay, I'm getting invitations for podcasts. I'm getting messages from people about like asking me questions and wanting to set up a session. Like I started to pay attention to when those invitations would come through.
And can we just stop for one second?
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm so sorry. That is so golden. That is so golden. So if you're a projector and you're listening, or if you're raising a projector, you love a projector and you're listening, that was like your intuition on steroids. Like our intuition doesn't come out of nowhere. And for you, it's very tied to being recognized in the invitation. So probably, I'm assuming, which is not a good word to use, but part of you being able to walk away from or needing to walk away from Power to Some Other, there was nothing, there was no recognition, there weren't invitations. So you're like following the path the universe has laid out for you through invitations and recognition, and Sage Paws is on fire. So it's like when we're, you know, for sacral beings, so generators and manifesting generators, it is so hard to train people to trust their sacral and to just follow the lit up. The lit up. But that's exactly what you're doing as a projector in a different way, through the invitation, through the recognition. You're still following the path and you feel amazing. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was like, oh my that's God, like projectors, listen to this, please. Listen to how it feels.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And I have a defined spleen too. So I often will like, I've really started listening to my intuition and sometimes it comes in as a very clear word or couple of words. Like people outside the space probably thinks it's crazy, but I literally will hear like a voice, like this spoken word or spoken like a couple of words, or I'll like have this feeling in my body. It's not always words, but sometimes it is. And I do feel that with these invitations that are coming in, I can feel that hit from my spleen, even though that's not my authority. Like I still feel that. And then it's like, I go to the emotional, like how I would make the decision using my emotional authority.
Can but I just explain I do, that what you I said? Do feel that.
Yes.
I just want to explain it for listeners. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. So Jen, I have this as well. So I have a defined spleen, a defined sacral, an emotional center. Jen has a defined spleen and a defined emotional center. And when we look at your human design chart, when you are actually looking at it, you're always going to read from left to right. So it for authorities, for how they speak. So the spleen speaks once and quickly. And I think that everybody, even outside of the human design space, many of us have had that voice, that something drop in where it's like, turn left here, or, you know, you're looking for your keys and you don't know, and you just hear something or feel something, you just know where they are. That's your spleen. And then you don't have a defined sacral. I have a defined sacral. So then I would go to my sacral and my sacral would weigh in on it. And it would be, for me, it feels much stronger than the spleen. The spleen is like fleeting, very, very fleeting. Mm-hmm. And then the emotional system takes a long ass time. But that spleen, yes, if you have your spleen defined, you will have those hits. And I believe them to be intuitive hits as well. They can't be anything else. They're so quick and so golden. So I just wanted to explain that to listeners. Sorry to bring them along.
Yeah.
No, so you feel your spleen that's when good. You're getting these invitations, when you're getting this recognition, you feel your spleen, you sometimes get these hits, and then you move through how, where the recognition is leading you, where the invitation is leading you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happens if you're absolutely drained and exhausted? Do you find it hard to say no to invitations if they're wrong for you?
Sometimes I have found that where I'll get an invitation and I will quickly respond. And then sometimes I'm like, maybe I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I try not to be hard on myself because, again, my third line is there. Like I meant to trial and error my way through it. But there have been times where I'm like, maybe I should have sat with that, where I kind of missed like how I was feeling and I made the decision. And then, and then find like, oh, that wasn't exactly it. But I think too, like having a defined will probably comes in to play.
Yeah.
I'm sure of that. And then I'm sure my defined heart probably factors that too. Factors into that too.
So do you know how or how does the wrong invitation feel? Like when you get into something and you immediately know, oof, that wasn't the right.
Feel bitter.
Bitter. Okay.
I feel bitter.
Okay. And how does that show up in your life?
Like, trying to think like if there's anything external, it's more of like an internal thing where I just feel this like they don't like, and I get this internal conversation of like just like frustrated and like not recognized. Like I don't feel recognized. I feel like I'm just like, this does not bring me joy. Like I don't like this. I just feel like I'm just, this is resistance that comes in of like. And I feel that with my, I'm doing relief work in general practice to help pay bills. It's my main source of income right now. And I feel that bitterness when I go and do those shifts. Mm-hmm. And I love the people that I work with, but it's the work that I'm doing where I just feel like I want to bang my head up against a wall.
Okay.
Like this is not the work that I want to be doing.
Yeah.
But I need to make money to live. So it's like, it's always been this temporary thing, and it has given me the freedom and the flexibility to build Sage Paws and without the pressure of it needing to be successful financially.
Yeah.
But I am feeling that bitterness. It's there a lot more, and I can just feel like I need to, I'm ready. I'm so ready, beyond ready to step away from doing, doing that work. But yeah, it just feels like I can feel myself like ruminating and just thought spiraling and just very internally feeling negative. I don't feel like I project that out. I feel like it's all very much internal and just like frustration with certain things. And it's like, it's not that person's fault. Like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to put into words, but it's just like this feeling.
But I think it's very relatable because I don't think there's a person on the planet who hasn't been there. And I also think it's important to normalize the fact that sometimes we do things where we take another gig or something like that. And often the purpose is just to kind of calm our nervous system. So our nervous system, like you said, the pressure, I don't have this pressure that, oh my God, if Sage Paws doesn't make X number of dollars this week, we're sinking, you know, like sometimes that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that in the entrepreneurial online space, too many people feel like they're failing if they have to take something else in the meantime while they're building it. Because I feel like Ra, the founder of Human Design, always said, recognition starts with you. And I feel like a lot of projectors really have no clue how to do that. So can you talk us through that piece?
Yeah, I can. Your suggestion to do mirror work was a big part in me starting to recognize myself. And I may not always like do that in the mirror, but like if I'm, you know, walking or I'll be recognized for something and I will say it out loud, like I am the expert on anticipatory grief, or I know my shit when it comes to this. Like, and so just like saying that either out loud or to myself, or like if I have a client that comes in and they are like my ideal client, I will say like to the universe, like, more of that, please. Yeah. Like, when I feel so recognized, and just that, like, that cloud nine feeling, just like my body feels like it's on fire, like in the best way possible. And I will, you know, recognize myself for that and just say like, more of that, please. That's what I want.
So can you give us one tip for, because I feel like a lot of projectors don't know, just like manifesting generators and generators don't know what their sacral feels like. A lot of projectors really don't, like, we've had someone on calls with us recently. And she's like, you know, when I'll say, well, that's recognition, she's like, oh my God, they recognized me. I didn't know that that's what that was. So can you, like, one tip that someone could be like, oh, that's recognition, so that in their life they could be like, and I love your tip of saying it out loud, just getting into that practice. What would you say to a projector who's just learning about recognition and invitation?
I would pay attention to, I mean, I guess it depends on what you're doing. Like, what are people asking you about? Well, like, what questions are they asking you? Maybe that's on Instagram or in the comment section, if you're creating content and making posts, or what are they asking you about in person? They want your advice on something. They want your guidance on something. And it's easy to miss that, because if you're just going through the motions, you're not looking for it. It's so easy to miss it. And I was definitely doing that. But now that it's like, okay, in recognition, what am I getting invitations for? What are people saying? Like, hey, I want you to be on my podcast. We want to talk about this. Hey, this is what happened with my dog. Can you provide like some insight? Or they'll ask me like, oh, I have a friend, she's really struggling with knowing when it's time. Can I give her your information? So it's just like paying attention to what people are asking, questions and messages and calls. And then also knowing that I have a fifth line where people are going to project stuff onto me, double checking, like, is this something that feels like I want to help them with? Because I have received so many invitations to take on a full-time position at this vet hospital that I'm doing relief at. And while it is very like flattering to hear these clients, because it'd be like, when are you going to, are you here full time? Are you here? Like, and I'm like, well, it's just da 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 da. And so I can feel that like projection piece onto me, but I recognize now, knowing what I know about myself and my design, of like, that's not the right invitation for me. Like, thank you. Like, I'm like I said, very flattered for that, but I know in my gut, in my soul, like, that's not the correct invitation for me.
And I think for projectors, really allowing yourself to say no and to really trust that another invitation will come that is aligned, because so many times I see projectors taking every invitation that comes along, and it's almost for fear that another one won't come.
Yes. So I felt that.
Yeah.
I have absolutely felt that.
Okay. All right. So how did you get into my world? Oh, I don't know. I still want to ask you that question, but I remember you bought Content by Design like way before it was even for sale. You found like a backdoor in, and maybe it's a projector thing, because Barb did that too, but I found a backdoor in, and I'm like, wait a minute, we're not even in launch yet. So how did you get in here?
I found your podcast, and I cannot tell you how I found your podcast. It might've been through, cause I'm a Bodygraph member. So it may have come through an email.
Yep.
And I think I imagine it probably came through one of those emails, and I found your podcast and I just started binging it. And I was like, I'd already been diving into the world of using human design in your business, but it just felt kind of piecemeal. What I found, it was all good. Like, it was again, trial and error, trying things like it was all very good information, but I felt like there was, I don't know, something missing. Like, there were more dots that needed to be connected. And then I'm hearing you talking about your approach to creating content and using your human design and all the nuances that you bring to it. And it just, I almost felt like I had a lit up sacral where I was just like, immediate yes. Like, maybe that was my spleen, I don't know. But it just, like, in my body, I could feel, once I heard you starting to talk about Content by Design, I, like, every episode I listened to about that, I just felt more and more certain that that was the missing piece that I was looking for. And I could not wait to start. I remember when it was finally October, I was like, this feels like Christmas morning. I've been waiting so long. Cause I think I bought it in like July of last year or something like that. And we did like our one-to-one call, and I could not wait to get started because I just felt it in my body. Like I did not really have to go through much of an emotional like wave process for that. It felt like a crystal clear hell yes. Like when I made the decision that that's what I wanted to do.
I love that you said that because I think sometimes too, as emotional authorities, you were already in it with me. Like you didn't like come to the Content by Design sales page cold and be like, I'm going to make a rash decision. You were in it. You were feeling through the podcast. I don't know how many episodes you listened to, but probably a lot. And you felt your way all the way through. So I think sometimes as emotional authorities, we can stop ourselves thinking we have to wait longer when we've actually already been doing the thing all along and the decision is already there. So I love that you said that like that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was going to say, like, I have started to notice that the more I pay attention to my emotional authority, what the wave feels like, that there are some decisions where I am in that place of clarity when I'm like ready to make it.
Yeah.
And then other times I will feel myself go through the highs and the lows, but there have definitely been times where it's like, this is crystal clear to me. Like I feel this emotional neutrality, like not one way or the other about it. Like I just know that this is it.
And you trust. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause so many times as emotional authorities, I find we can just spin out, not trusting, thinking we have to keep waiting. Yeah. And then, so you fast forward from Content by Design, you decided to join us in Design to Profit, which is the membership that supports you before and after Content by Design. What does that mean to you being in that community? What has it meant to you? What has it meant for your business, for your human design journey, anything?
It is so awesome to be in that community, especially others who love human design and are using it in their life and their business, because I feel like I can't talk about it with everybody. Mm. And just like to have somebody that knows the language already, and then to have you who is just so well versed in human design, where you can like I loved when you would look at our chart and like when we were going through the dormant gates and you would go through each of our gates and talk about it, and this is how you can use it in your message. Like I loved just listening to you talk about human design and our specific charts. And it's just so beautiful to see how each of us are so different with designs, and there's so many different ways to build your business, to do your content. And it's like, it's not one way is not right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like your way. And this, I feel like, ties back to my whole motherhood thing of doing things your way, like human design helps you understand how to do it. And it feels so much easier. Like it's not that it eliminates like frustration and things like that. Like there's still those normal pieces of business, but when you come back to your design and who you are and like recalibrate, it does feel a lot easier in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And just feels so good to create a business that is in alignment with that.
Awesome. Awesome. Where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram. My handle is @_sage_pause. And then sagepause.com is my website.
Okay. And I'll link those up in the show notes.
And then soon to be Sage Pause Podcast.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll link your Instagram and your website up in the show notes. And then once your podcast is ready, you send it to me and I will link that in there as well. Yeah. So thank you for being here. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's always fun to talk to you and talk human design and business and all the things. So
yeah,
thank
all you. The things. I am now welcoming new members into my Design to Profit community. I'll pop the link in the show notes for you. If you would love to build your business without breaking your life, then Design to Profit is where it's at. This is where the rubber meets the road with the nuances of your human design, building the business that you're made for, impacting the people you're here to impact, and having a full life while living out your purpose. Join us inside Design to Profit and get cracking.